Hello, sports fans. Good evening, and thanks for tuning in this evening. Welcome to another expanded 30-minute edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. I'm Douglas Impoga, sitting in for Sunny Young. Stand up! Stand up!
Stand up! Stand up! Friends, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Yes, my friend.
The Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports.
The Sunny Side of Sports Show.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Sunny Side of Sports, right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Stand up. Let's kick off with football. In the African Confederation Cup, a seven-time African champions, Egypt's El Ahly, face Ivorian side Sewe Sport in the Confederation Cup final. The first leg of the final is in Abidjan on Saturday, while the return match is scheduled for a week later in Cairo. Interestingly, the two sides met in the group stages of the tournament, which ended in a 1-1 draw in Ivory Coast before Ahly won their home tie 1-0. This year has not been so good for Egypt, the African football giant. After decades of football successes at national team and club levels, the Pharaohs failed for a record third consecutive time to reach the Africa Cup of Nations finals, a competition they have won a record seven times. Ahly, who have won the Africa Champions League title a record three straight times in a row, were eliminated by Libyan namesakes Al Ahly Benghazi in the final qualifying round for the group phase. Fellow Cairo club Zamalek did make the mini-league stage, only to finish bottom of the table. Neither Ismailia nor Wagi Degla, the original 2014 Confederation Cup entrants from the North African state, got beyond the qualifying stage. So, Al Ahly just might restore some pride in Egyptian football if they win the Confederation Cup final. In African football, it's less than 2 months to the 2015 Africa Cup of Nations final in Equatorial Guinea. Giants Nigeria and Egypt failed to make it to the finals, but the small island nation of Cape Verde not only led their group, but was among the first to qualify. My colleague Sunny Young reached our football guru David Legg in Johannesburg, South Africa, to talk about this and a lot more. Here is Sunny.
First off, David, the Blue Sharks from Cape Verde, they've been playing some quality football the past few years. Your thoughts?
That's right, Sunny. What they've proved, I believe, in Group F is that performance in 2013 was no fluke. Just to remind our listeners to the Sunny Side of Sport, they came to the 2013 finals in South Africa as debutants. And I think most people felt that, well, the Sharks, they won't be biting too much. But they did very well. They held South Africa, they held Morocco, and then they beat fellow Portuguese-speaking team Angola to reach the quarterfinals. And their 2-0 defeat by Ghana actually flattered the Black Stars, who certainly were not two goals better than the Cape Verdeans. And it's an amazing story, Sunny. This is a country which consists of a whole lot of islands off the west coast of Africa and a total population of about 500,000 people. It's tiny. I mean, when you think that there are so many Nigerians, so many South Africans, so many Egyptians, and here's a country of 500,000 people. They don't have a particularly strong local league, and their club sides never really feature strongly in the CAF club competitions. But lo and behold, at national level, things are just on the up and up. And they actually, Sunny, were the first country to qualify. They qualified in after match day four. And here we have a group with a recent winner of the competition in Zambia, and yet Cape Verde finished top of the table. And the Zambians, Sunny, after a rather poor start in which they were held at home by Mozambique and then lost away to the Cape Verde Islands, they've come back strongly, unbeaten in four games. And they did beat Cape Verde 1-0, I think probably an important psychological victory. Mozambique, they threatened early on, but the crucial match for them was the penultimate game against Zambia, which they lost 1-0 in Maputo. And really disappointing on Niger. Now, Niger, of course, have been minnows of African football, but they reached the last two Africa Cup of Nations tournaments. And I believe they'll be extremely disappointed that from six matches, the best they could manage was three draws. So well done again to those Blue Sharks. Aside, incidentally, Sonny, that are ranked fourth in Africa. I think that might be slightly flattering, but FIFA, they do these rankings very carefully, and that's the position they're in. There's only three countries above them, and they are Algeria, Ivory Coast, and Tunisia. So for a country of 500,000 people, they're not doing too badly.
I have to believe this Nations Cup qualifying campaign did a lot to boost the stature of one Ephraim Shakes Mashaba there in South Africa. As I look at the table, Bafana Bafana, one of only four teams to not lose a match in this Africa Cup of Nations qualifying campaign, the three others being Tunisia, Cameroon, and Gabon. Your thoughts on Mashaba and what he's done with Bafana Bafana, David?
Sonny, in a word, amazing. He took over, ironically, one of his challengers for the job was Stephen Keshi. Stephen Keshi was had put his name into the hat to take over the team known as Bafana Bafana, which means the boys. There were very mixed feelings when Mashaba was appointed. Some felt he would be out of his depth, but others felt he had this good rapport with the players. He understood the players. More importantly, Sonny, and I think this has been borne out in the qualifying competition, he's not dazzled by the bright lights of the big clubs. In South Africa, three clubs really stand out. They are Kaizer Chiefs, Orlando Pirates, they're the traditional Soweto Giants. And then you've got Mamelodi Sundowns, who are based in a Pretoria township, and they're also a very strong club. And previous coaches seem to be almost in awe of these clubs, and they had to pick players from them. But Mashaba was having none of that, and he also picked players who sometimes were not even regulars with their club sides. An amazing man, really, in many ways. He used to sell peanuts on trains running between Johannesburg and Soweto to make a living. And he's gradually built up this reputation of being a very strong-willed man. He has been in charge of Bafana Bafana before, but he fell out with officials. Now he's basically seen as a messiah here in South Africa. When you think that South Africans were disappointed that the national team did not win in Nigeria after taking that two-goal lead, that tells you how far South African football has come under Mashaba. And it's not as if he has some magic wand or he's the greatest tactician in the world. I think it's all in the mind, Sonny. He's a tremendous motivator, and he's the sort of coach who will make a diminutive player believe he's 6'4". Tall. He has this amazing ability. And the other thing, he's worked with the young sides. He's worked with the under-17s and he's worked with the under-20s. And he's pushed some of those players forward into the squad. And I think that's been a big weakness of, for example, Gordon Eggerson, who was the previous coach. I think he had little or no knowledge of what was happening sort of beneath the surface down there in the countryside at under-17 and under-20 level. And I think there's also a lesson there for the future for South Africa. You know, we Africans, we're always asking the questions, well, why are the Europeans and the South Americans always winning the World Cup? Why are the Germans so strong? Because they build up slowly but surely. Often you find, take Germany, an example, you'll have the national coach of the under-17s. He's promoted to the under-20s, to the under-23s, and then to the senior team. And also, when Germany did not do particularly well in some competitions, I mean, for the Germans, just getting to the semi-finals is considered to be almost failure. They didn't ditch Joachim Löw. They kept faith in him. And we saw what happened in Brazil. Can we ever, ever forget that semi-final against Brazil, that 7-1 victory, and then the final against Argentina? But, you know, to go back to a point I made earlier, Sonny, about another country, Nigeria, the momentum built up from the last Nations Cup and then the World Cup is now going to be lost when this presumably new coach comes in. So hopefully this will not happen in South Africa. Mashaba has got a contract to the World Cup in Russia in 2018, and South Africans are in awe of this man. He's a very humble, down-to-earth person. When he's driving into training, as I witnessed the other day in Soweto, a lot of the newfound fans of the national football team, they wanted selfies with the coach. And he didn't brush them aside, as some other coaches would have done in the past. He very patiently and religiously went through the motions so that everybody got their selfie with Sheikh Mashaba. And, of course, Sonny, the headline writers in newspapers are having a field day, you know. Shakes this and shakes that, shaking up the squad. but what's absolutely amazing about this campaign is the away form of the South Africans. The South Africans traditionally have been pretty competitive at home, even against their nemesis, Nigeria. But on the road, they've been atrocious at times. Now, they go to Sudan and win 3-0. They go to Congo, Brazzaville, and they win 2-0. And they go to Nigeria, they lead 2-0. They have a player sent off, and they still come away with a very credible 2-0 draw. Yeah, Sonny, that is progress indeed. It's going to be really interesting now, this Nations Cup, because I've been looking at the field, Sonny, and as you correctly said, 9 former champions, 4 former runners-up. And the other 3 countries, that's Cape Verde, Gabon, and Equatorial Guinea, they've all reached the quarterfinals. So it's a star-studded lineup. And also, I think it's extremely difficult. Here we are, 2 months basically before the tournament kicks off. No team jumps out, Sonny, as an obvious favorite. I know Algeria will have their supporters. A lot of people will probably feel it's time for Ghana to finally make it. But as I look at the field, Sonny, it looks extremely competitive. I would hazard a guess that there probably are up to 8 potential champions from that field of 16. The only thing I do know for certain ahead of this tournament is Ivory Coast, who in the last 5 tournaments were the clear favorites to win. It was always a question of who would finish second. But this time, you cannot, under any circumstance, make Ivory Coast the favorites. They're going to be actually among the underdogs.
Finally, David, we can now look forward to the Nations Cup draw in early December in Equatorial Guinea. VOA! Can you tell our VOA football fans, how does that draw work?
What you will have, Sonny, in the next week or so is CAS will announce the seedings, and that will be based normally on the previous 3 Cup of Nations tournaments. But CAS, you know, they're never without their surprises, and sometimes they toss in some of the World Cup qualifying results as well, just to make it more interesting and for the media more confusing. So those 16 qualifiers, Sonny, they will be divided into 4 groups of 4 in terms of seeding, based, I believe, primarily on those Cup of Nations results. And then in Malambo, the capital of Equatorial Guinea, on the 3rd of December, and that's something for all our Sunnyside of Sport listeners to jot down, to remember. Normally that draw will take place in the evening time. You'll have the draw which will decide, Sonny, 4 groups of 4 countries. So you'll have 4 groups, and each one of them will have 4. And what then happens is each country plays the other 3 teams in the group once. And, of course, it's the normal situation. 3 points for a win, 1 for a draw, and none for a loss. At the end of those 4 groups, the top 2 countries in each group will go forward to the quarterfinals. So you'll have your 4 quarterfinals, then obviously your 2 semifinals. The one match that a lot of people argue is really, it's about time it was kicked into touch, and that is the 3rd place playoff. And Sonny, you can already put your money on that being between Mali and Ghana, because that was what happened in 2012 and 2013, and Mali won on each occasion. The Malians just love those 3rd place playoffs. And then, of course, ultimately, you have the final. And I'm looking forward to the tournament, Sonny, on the one hand, but I'm also a bit nervous because I keep looking at this list of qualifiers, and it is so difficult to pick potential champions. I just see so many teams. I mean, some of the football played by Guinea against Uganda in Casablanca was beautiful to watch. Lovely one-touch passing. The South Africans, potentially, they could be strong challengers if they can continue from where they left off in Uyo. And there are so many other countries like Ghana, long overdue a success. Algeria, out to prove that they are the number one team in Africa. You've got Ivory Coast, after so many failures when they were the favorites, could they now sort of defy logic and win it when they're not the favorites, and so on and so forth. The Zambians, can they bounce back after disappointing 2-13? Yeah, so many questions, Sonny. Just a shortage of answers at the moment.
Our football guru, David Legg, in Johannesburg, South Africa, speaking with my colleague, Sonny Young. In athletics, 2014 Boston Marathon winner Meb Keflezighi was last week named the Athlete of the Year and honored with the Jesse Owens Award. The award is USATF's highest honor, presented annually to outstanding track and field performers. Along with Meb, Jenny Simpson also won the Jackie Joyner Casey Award. The Richmond-born Meb Keflezighi became the first American man in 31 years to win the Boston Marathon in April. I reached Meb in San Diego, California. Congratulations, Meb.
Well, thanks, Doug. It's a great honor to be, you know, same wavelength as Jesse Owens, the great Jesse Owens, and to be nominated, or actually win the Athlete of the Year for the NSA Track and Field is huge. And with also Jenny Simpson, who's also the female version of the Jesse Owens, which is the Jackie Joyner Casey Award. So among great company.
Yeah, this is a very great achievement. How do you feel?
Well, it's a great honor to be able to say, you know, be called the Athlete of the Year, because the United States is such a great, the number one team. All disciplines, all different events is very strong. You have throwers, you have sprinters, you have jumpers, you know. You have middle distance, long distance, and to be recognized because of my effort at winning the Boston Marathon and finishing fourth at the New York City Marathon, and to be named first time in 2000 in about 12 years, a marathoner, to be Athlete of the Year is a huge, huge accomplishment. I feel proud and honored.
Yes, as you say, you won the 2014 Boston Marathon, being the first American in 31 years. You won the 2009 New York City Marathon, again being the first American since 1982. What motivates you, Meb?
What motivates me is to get the best out of myself. You know, I feel blessed to, you know, I was born in Eritrea and came to Italy, lived in Italy for a year and a half, and then to the United States in 1987. I've been in the United States for 27 years now. And, you know, I never was a runner when I was in Eritrea because of the opportunities, but my physical education class in seventh grade started all that my talent, that my God-given talent, that it was there, and I had great mentors and advisors to help me nurture that talent, and now stand with you, you know, 27 years later, and to be, you know, to still be motivated to get the best out of myself. And in the process, there's been a lot of great achievements. But this one, winning the Boston Marathon in 2014 and to be named Athlete of the Year for USA Track and Field is such a huge honor. And, you know, we all have different talents, different abilities, as long as we pursue our passion. And I feel that I have done that. And you never know. The future is not guaranteed, but you work the hardest and do the best that you can. And everything usually works for the best. And never thought I would be where I am at 39. Maybe, I had, you know, Jesse Owens Award, I was hoping to get it, potentially work hard to get it in 2005, 2006. But to do it almost 10 years later is just beyond my imagination. But it's all in God's time. And just do the best you can every time, and the rest will take care of itself.
Yeah, maybe as you say, you won the Boston Marathon almost when you're almost 39, beating the strongest field in the race history. Do you intend to continue competing? What are your future plans? Could you share?
Yeah, I mean, my future plan is I'm 39 now. Hopefully, you know, about less than a year and a half now for the 2016 Olympic trials is in L.A. in 2016 in February. And I hope I'll be in good health and condition and see if I can make my fourth Olympic team. I've been very honored to represent the United States in three Olympic teams in 2000, 2004, where I also won silver medal after 28 years for the United States. And then Beijing Olympics, unfortunately, because I had pelvis fracture and I couldn't even walk, I have to crawl like a baby to move one place to another. But I worked very hard on therapy and came back and ran a personal best. I'm still running my best time ever, and made the 2012 Olympics, and now see if I can make one more Olympics in 2016. And, you know, I'll be 41 if I'm fortunate enough to make the team.
Yes, lastly, Meb, what advice would you have for upcoming young athletes?
Well, my advice to young, you know, athletes or any person that is trying to achieve great things, things don't happen overnight. You know, success takes time, makes progress, and as long as you are working hard toward the goal, you know, you need to have short-term goal, but also don't lose sight of what the big goal is, you know. And for me, you know, Beijing, I thought it was going to be my peak period to be able to perform my best and try to get another medal or gold medal, but you don't always get what you want, but don't give up on your passion and your dreams. And sometimes you can want it so bad you really want to achieve it, but there's going to be bumps on the road. But if you know that and down in your heart that you can believe you can achieve it, never have somebody tell you can't do it. And because you're the one that's doing the work day in, day out, and keep the faith and make progress, more progress, and to hopefully bigger goal.
Thanks, Meb. Meb and Jenny Simpson will receive the awards at a ceremony on December 4th in Anaheim, California, held in conjunction with USATF annual meeting.
If you would like to leave a voicemail for possible use on a future Sunny Side of Sports broadcast, please call 1-202-205-9942. Once again, that number, 1-202-205-9942.
VOA!
When you hear the VOA identification, press 60, and please include your name and where you are calling from.
Voice of America!
Now let's join Daybreak Africa's sportsman Marco Uma in Johannesburg, South Africa.
Guinea are Africa's most improved national team, while Egypt have slipped by the widest margin, according to the latest FIFA rankings released in Zurich, Switzerland on Thursday. Ranked 18th, Algeria's Desert Fox are Africa's highest placed team. Tunisia is 22nd, Ivory Coast 24th, Senegal 35th, Ghana 37th, Guinea 38th, Cameroon 41st, African champions Nigeria 42nd, Mali 49th, and South Africa 51st. In Ivory Coast, lethal striker Roger Assali, the most valuable player in the Ivory Coast Premier League, leads Sewe Sports attack when they host Egypt's El Ahly in the opening leg of the Orange Africa Confederations Cup final in Abidjan tomorrow Saturday. Assali has 4 goals to his credit in the Confederations Cup campaign. Sewe Sports are up against Africa's most successful club, El Ahly, who have won 18 Orange African Champions League titles and an Afro-Asian Cup. El Ahly's impressive trophy cabinet confirmed them as having won more international trophies than any club in the world. Italy's AC Milan and Argentina's Boca Juniors are second and third respectively. Nonetheless, the new look El Ahly side seek to break new grounds by becoming the first Egyptian club to win the Orange Africa Confederations Cup.
Daybreak Africa's sportsman Marco Uma reporting from Johannesburg, South Africa. Thanks, Mark. In boxing, it's been a busy schedule lately as the year comes to an end. 8th division world champion Filipino Manny Pacquiao beat then undefeated American boxer Chris Algieri last Sunday. Meanwhile, veteran Bernard Hopkins was beaten by 31-year-old powerful Sergey Kovalev. My colleague, Sunny Young, sought out boxing analyst Nandi Hollywood Maweta to talk about this and much more.
Nandi, Bernard Hopkins, the veteran American boxer, 49 years old, recently lost his IBF and WBA light heavyweight titles to a Russian, Sergey Crusher Kovalev, and Crusher dominated the bout, winning every round. First off, Namdi, is this the last fight for Hopkins, and what's his legacy?
This will not be his last fight. This is the first time we see him get what we call a beat down. Every fight in the past has been coming in clean and going out clean, you know. So, but this is the first time we really see a beat down of Bernard Hopkins. But we cannot forget this man's legacy. From 1995 to 2005, he defended his middleweight title 20 times. In 2011, he became the oldest boxing champion at 46 years, 4 months in history. A mark he broke last March since turning professional 26 years ago. He was leaving us with 55 wins, 7 losses, and two draws and 32 knockouts. He will be 50 in January. Don't count him out. He'll be back to beat up on all these paper champions masquerading as title holders. He can still do it, man.
Namdi in the heavyweight division, Vladimir Klitschko, still can't be beaten. He knocks out this Bulgarian, Kubrat Pulev, in five rounds in Hamburg, Germany. Your thoughts on Klitschko, Namdi?
He knocked out the Poluka by name of Kubrat Pulev. Kubrat Pulev is ranked number 2 in the world. What a pity, Sonny. Well, we have to give it to Vladimir Klitschko because this is his first fan-friendly fight in a long time. You know, he has this terrible style we call jab and grab. The jab and grab style will put you to sleep, Sonny. But he's talking about unification, and he wants to fight the WBC champion, Brahmin Stevin. But Brahmin Stevin has a January 17 date with American power puncher Deontay Wilder. So the winner of Deontay Wilder, Brahmin Stevin, will give Vladimir Klitschko a run for his money.
Namdi, let's take a look at a few of the African fighters now. Great year for Uganda, Sharif the Lion Bogere. He scores 3 victories over Mexican opponents. Your thoughts on Bogere, Namdi?
The African Lion is on his way back. And I remind you again, he's got a style that television likes. And he's always a fighter the fans want to see. Television executive will put him on. So we look for him to crack the world title in 2015. Big moves for him. And I think he's back to where he was before. He's a good showman, and he represents the continent. Beautiful fighter.
Namdi, you talk about the Lion representing the continent. I was talking with one of my Ugandan colleagues, Douglas the Mighty Mpuga, and I was sort of comparing Bogere with another Ugandan fighter, Kasim Ouma. And Douglas says Bogere is much cleaner in the way that he approaches the fight game. In other words, he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke between fights. Your thoughts?
And a gentleman, too. And when you speak with him, it's fun to listen to him, fun to interview him. I like him to bring the power of John the Beast Mugabe. if he can bring a little bit of John the Beast Mugabe's power to add it to his repertoire, yes, he'll be a complete puncher, a complete boxer. But I like to see him, a little bit of John the Beast Mugabe, Cornelius Boza Edwards, Ayub Kalule, mix it in. Yes, we have a dangerous puncher from Africa.
Bogere now being promoted by Golden Boy Boxing, Namdi. How important is that to his career?
Very important for you to be aligned with the best promoter in the world because he can deliver TV dates. If you have a promoter who cannot give you good fights on TV, everything comes down to television, son. It's not about 100 people in the casino watching you fight and nobody. But when we talk about a fight with a reputable promoter, he puts you on Fox television. Millions will see you, not only in America, but around the globe. So you need that man that has the power and also can cut the check, because after the fight, your check is in the dressing room waiting for you.
Namdi, a couple of Nigerian fighters that you follow closely, Wale Omotoso and Latif Kayode. First, Wale, what's up with him?
Wale moved up from welterweight to junior middleweight, which is a super welterweight. He's no longer with Bob Arum. His most recent promoter, Dan Guzin, suddenly died last month. But the family, Guzin family, they're moving forward with fights. They just had one fight for Wale on Thursday right here in Hollywood. So Wale's back. Wale only lost one fight, you know. The fact that he only lost one fight and the promoter caught him loose, that kind of surprised us. But, hey, he's a good fighter. And now with this promotion company moving forward with fights for him in Hollywood, I think we'll see Playboy Omotoso come back soon, big time.
What about Latif Power Kayode, Namdi? Last time we chatted, he was getting beat convincingly by a big Cuban.
Well, he got knocked out by Luis Ortiz. But after the fight, Luis Ortiz tested positive for banned substance, which means The result of that one-round knockout is null and void. So Latif Kayode will still remain undefeated, but he needs to move down to the cruiserweight because the big boys are too strong for Latif Kayode. Though he has what we call Agbara, but that Agbara is not strong enough for the big boys.
Nandi, Hollywood Maweta, speaking with my colleague Sunny Young. And that wraps up another expanded edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. And thank you for tuning in. I'm Douglas Mpuga.